Hello and welcome along to the Property Academy podcast by Opus Partners. I'm your host, Steve McKnight.
And I'm Andrew Nicol.
And to our show, we're once again being joined by Martin Hawes, and we're going to talk about, well, what do you invest in and when, at what stage of your life? And Martin, I know in your book you call it, you know, a life of two halves. What are those two halves?
It's basically accumulation and decumulation. So the accumulation phase of life, you know, probably runs from your 20s or 30s through to your 60s. And you are accumulating wealth. You're trying to build wealth. The decumulation phase is when you take what investments that you've accumulated and start to use them and decumulate them. That is, you start to run them down. Because very few people in retirement now live on investment returns alone. Instead, they live on their investment returns, plus they draw a little part of their capital. And that means that their net worth is starting to decline as they decumulate. And of course, the race is on between, will your money last as long as you do? Because my parents kept saying that we kids should not rely on them for inheritances, because when they died, the check to the undertaker would bounce. That is, they'd go out on the last dollar. Now, that's amusing, but it's actually very difficult to do. So when you die, you're going to be, maybe your estate is left with some money, in which case you've left some lifestyle on the table, or you're going to spend your last 5 years or so living on wine biscuits and reused tea bags or something. Finding life pretty difficult. Trying to get that perfect balance is actually difficult. And that comes down to a drawdown rate. So when we're in that decumulation phase, how much are we going to decumulate from the investments that we have?
And just before we get to the decumulation phase, we've got to think about, well, how are we going to build wealth so that we can get to the phase where we've got something to sell off and decumulate? And just before we hit recording, you were saying, you know what, the way you invest in your 20s is quite different from how you invest in your 60s. So if somebody's listening to this, they're at the start of that accumulation phase where they're trying to build up some assets. What should their approach be like?
Their approach, I believe, should not be diversified so much as actually quite concentrated. That is, they should be thinking about which asset class they really like, which asset class they think they could develop some expertise in, and invest largely, if not completely, in just that one asset class. Now, this creates a bit of eye rolling among some of my colleagues because they're saying, oh no, everybody should be diversified. And yet those same people wouldn't bat an eyelid if somebody said, well, I'm going to buy a business or I'm going to set up a business. And, you know, there are a lot of people who have done that and who have done that very successful. Now, those people have concentrated not just their money, but just about everything they have. They live, eat, and breathe that business, and they really, really work it. I can't see anything the matter with the same person doing that with a property portfolio and try and setting a goal for saying, you know, it could be an aspirational, quite an aspirational goal. You know, I'm going to have a net worth of $5 million in 20 years' time or something like that, and doing that through property or doing it through shares. And even in shares, you might narrow that down and say through technology shares. And I'm going to become expert in those. I'm going to understand everything that's going on in AI or everything that's going on in biotech. Similarly with property, you know, I regard property as a business. And I think if you're going to go into property, you need to say, I'm going to be investing in property in Spraydon, which is a suburb of Christchurch, and I'm going to know everything about what is going on in Spraydon, and I'm going to be looking for really good deals. I'm going to be able to spot bargains, spot deals that have got a bit of a twist in them. And that's no different from buying a cafe and working 60 hours a week in or on that cafe. And I would actually do that for, you know, for a younger person. There are people, though, who may be in the professions and they will have a surplus, I hope, of income over expenditure. And they should work hard on their profession, make sure that income keeps coming, make sure the income actually increases and that they move up the ladder in whatever profession they're in. and then take that surplus and invest it, maybe give it to somebody else to invest it for them, because their number one wealth-creating asset is actually their brains, if they're in the profession. And they, if they're a lawyer, they should be make sure that they're very good at lawyering. And similarly, if they're an accountant or engineer or architect or whatever, make sure that they derive as much income as they can and then push that surplus off to be invested.
And Martin, you keep using a phrase, both at this episode and in the previous one, that I'm really interested in. You said you should be looking at properties in Spraydon with a twist. What does with a twist mean?
It means, and they're much less readily available than they used to be in the old days, but it means buying something which has a little bit of risk in it and may not come off. But if it does come off, then you end up buying a property very cheaply. So it may be, you know, if we look at residential is probably less common, but residential, you know, it could be that if you did, you know, that shed out the back could be converted into, you know, the council might that you convert that into something that very cheaply and easily that you can rent out. Or it may be that with a little bit of effort and a little bit of advice, you may be able to subdivide the section. When it comes to commercial property, twists are usually in terms of who the tenant is. So it may be a lease that's coming up, almost finished, and the tenant's given notice that they're not going to renew the lease. So it's really, it's effectively an empty property, but you may have somebody you know who that property would really suit. So it's those kinds of things where you can really add value. So it's not just buying something, it's being very active in terms of what would enhance very quickly the value of that property.
And so if you're thinking about a person who might want to invest in property, what do you think the ideal age is that someone should investigate it?
Oh, the time to plant a tree was 20 years ago. That's the best time to plant a tree. The second best is now. So really, assuming that property does well, I don't think it'll do as well as it has for the last 30 odd years. But, you know, let's say it still does quite well and that you gear that quite well into something really good, then the sooner that you do that, the better. You can't catch a fish if your hook's not in the water.
And actually, just thinking about, because you're probably one of the more experienced people in the investing industry that we've had on this show, how many times in your investing lifetime have you heard the words, property's not going to go up in value as quickly anymore, or property's overpriced, it's too expensive?
Yeah, and I've just said it. Of course, you know, like last week, I was talking about the opaque nature of the property market. So we don't really know how well it's done, the property market overall. We can pretty easily calculate a specific property, but we don't know overall. But you'd say anecdotally that property has done very well. Property is supposedly meant to produce 10% returns over long, long periods of time. And I would say over the last 30 years, it has probably beaten that. So it has done well. And I have just said it may not do as well. I'm not saying it's not going to do well, but it seems hard given the value that property was at up until 2 or 3 years ago for it to continue that and to do as well. But many, many times, to answer your question, have I heard and probably said myself, that's about it, that's peak property.
Yeah.
Okay, so we're talking about these two phases of life, the accumulation phase and the decumulation phase. So it's fascinating. It's quite different from what a lot of financial advisors talk about. You're saying when you're in your 20s, we concentrate. We concentrate on one type of asset, whether it be property or shares or a specific type of shares. We become an expert in that, try and build up some wealth. And then as we get older, we start to diversify. So let's say that somebody's in their 20s, they follow that strategy where they concentrate, they've done it for 20 years. Now they're nudging on kind of mid-50s, call it. How does the investment strategy start to change once you've got some wealth?
They need to start selling down, if they're able, what they have. Now, they may have concentrated it to a business and they may have built a bigger and a really, really good business. Might be hard to sell off bits of that business, you know, it may work as a whole. So they can't do that. They just need to one day take a very deep breath and sell the bloody business. But if they've got a property portfolio and let's say they've built up a property portfolio, they've got 8 rental properties, I would say at age 50, you might sell a couple and start to repay debt, use the proceeds of that to repay debt over the whole thing. And a few years later, you might sell another couple. And by the time you're 60, you might be left with a couple of properties instead of the 8 of them. So you'd gradually sort of sell down, repay debt, and then start to invest. And when you start to invest elsewhere, and when you start to do that, you necessarily start to diversify. One of the problems with property is it means that all your money is here in New Zealand. Now, I choose to live in New Zealand. I could live elsewhere if I wanted to. I choose to live here. It's a great place to live. But I'm sure as hell not going to have all my money here because the investment opportunities are relatively narrow and not as good. If you are a globalist as I am, and if you're prepared to look really wide and seeing what's going on in the world, you wouldn't simply invest in New Zealand.
It's quite fascinating, right? The first stage of your life is to get some wealth. Then it's, well, how do I grow it? But most importantly, more importantly, how do I not lose it? Or how do I make sure that I don't get a substantial hit? So I was actually looking at some data about what really makes people happy. And once you've built some wealth, once you've got a couple of $1 million to your name, whether it or $1 million through property, whatever it happens to be, the thing that really makes people unhappy is when they take a substantial hit in their net worth.
Yes, that's right.
Growing their net worth beyond $1 million or $2 million, that doesn't make you so happy.
Really?
But losing it makes you really unhappy because you had it. And so that's where diversification starts to come in. But once we diversify, so we've bought some properties or we've built a business, now we've started to diversify in our mid-50s, I'm now nudging on 65 where I want to stop working. Talk to me about that decumulation phase.
Decumulation is harder. Now, you guys won't believe me with this, but decumulation is harder than accumulation because decumulation has all sorts of factors. You need to figure out how much can I safely draw down from this and have the money last about as long as I do. And to do that calculation, the actuaries, and this is an actuarial calculation, very difficult. They look at expenditure patterns over your retirement period because they change. They're very high at the beginning usually and they gradually drop off. The investment returns over your 30-odd years of retirement. What's inflation going to be? What sort of volatility are you going to have? What tax is going to be like? So you've got all those factors that need to come in. That is really complicated. So to get around that for people, there have been developed sort of rules of thumb which say if you are, let's say, a 65-year-old and you have, let's say, $1 million, you would be able to, I'm going to call it the rule of 4.5%, would say that you could draw $45,000 each year. So that's 4.5% of $1 million. And you could draw that out each year for 30 years. And at 30 years, you'll be 95. But at 30 years, after you've drawn down $45,000 a year, your balance should be down to about zero. Now, you know, somebody might, a lot of people work now beyond 65. Most people, I think, work beyond 65. I'm beyond 65 and I'm still working and probably will forever, maybe, for as long as people want me. But, you know, if somebody started drawing down on their savings at, say, 70, they could probably draw more like 5 or maybe even 6%. So there are all these different rules of thumb, and the New Zealand Society of Actuaries has developed these rules of thumb, and they are available free on their website. They do a report about every year, and they change that a little bit according to what's happening in terms of tax and investment returns and so on.
And I know working with investors, Mun, it is quite scary for people knowing when they can actually give up work or stop earning money and what they can draw down. Because like you said before, you've got kind of two bad outcomes. Either you outlive your money, which is terrible, or you work so long that you never actually get to enjoy your money. Neither is an ideal scenario.
Yeah. And, you know, I say I'm still working. Well, I'm working about half as much as I did when I was, say, 50. You know, I've still got a couple of roles to speak. I'm a director of some companies like Lifetime Income, and I do a lot of work for Forsyth Barr. You can work part-time. I go to Europe every year now. I go rock climbing in Europe. I might start going to Japan to go skiing fairly soon. So I'm able to fit that in. I'm no longer working 60 hours a week or anything silly like that. And I think that working part-time or working contracts and that kind of thing is actually a very good way of doing this, or setting yourself up so that you can do whatever it is you do from anywhere in the world. So when you finish rock climbing in France, you know, you spend a couple of hours on the computer.
And sometimes you talk about getting a return on money reserved for cash flow. What does that mean?
I think what you're getting at there is the money that I think retired people should put aside, the cash that they should put aside. And that cash should be about 1 or 2 years equivalent of what they're drawing down from a portfolio. And it just means that if investment returns or markets are really down, they don't have to draw on their portfolio. They don't have to sell at a really bad time, but instead they can draw on that cash. It's very hard to get a decent return on that money, and it really should be with one of the major banks and on term deposit, laddered term deposits, you know, with variable maturities. You won't get a good return on it, but it will be safe.
Yeah, it's fascinating within this conversation, Martin, that most finance books at their core are really quite similar, right? You build up your wealth and then you gradually spend that wealth. You're like, that is every finance book, including our own, summarized in a single sentence. But it's about how do you go about doing that? And the wonderful thing is that, you know, some people will read your books and think, well, this is amazing. This really speaks to me. I understand this. And, you know, some people read maybe some other financial commentator's book and say, wow, this really speaks to me. And at their core, the fundamentals of finance and how you plan out your life and how you grow some wealth and then eventually spend that wealth, it's all more or less the same with different words and some slightly different tactics. But it's just wonderful to hear that those are universal principles that kind of apply to everybody.
You see, that's absolutely right. I mean, I haven't been alive for 100 years, but I doubt that there's been too much change over 100 years. And what we're doing as authors, the three of us in this conversation, what we're doing is looking for another way of saying it, a sharper way of saying it. I mean, that was what Kiyosaki was brilliant at, Rich Dad, Poor Dad. The advice is not new or anything like that. Rich Dad and Poor Dad weren't doing anything particularly special, but it was a bloody good title, and he followed that through in that book and then followed it through beyond that. And would that I could, I mean, I've done 20 Good Summers, and I think that again was just, that was really about what we've been talking about, and it gave permission people at about age 50 to slow down a bit if they could. And it's a good title, and it, you know, it was a different way of saying stuff that has been around. It's not new. I think I've come up over my career, I think I've come up with a few different phrases and new phrases that have cut through. And I think I've probably explained money stuff, you know, reasonably well. But I haven't set the world on fire with a brand new way of investing. Because I don't think it exists.
Well, you haven't yet, but maybe in your 24th book, Martin, which comes out, I think you're going to be finished within the next couple of weeks. Right, let's wrap it up there. But please don't forget to rate, review, and subscribe to the Property Academy podcast. Really does help us get the message out to more people. And hey, if you want to hear more from Martin, he regularly writes for us in the Informed Investor magazine. You might like to pick up a subscription at informedinvestor.co.nz. Thanks for listening to the Property Academy podcast. I'm your host, Steve McKnight.
And I'm Andrew Nicholl.
We're going to be back here tomorrow with even more daily strategies, tactics, and insights to help you get the most out of the New Zealand property market. Until next time.